left off last week, we were talking a little bit about Bona and Zoser, and we concluded with the Machlekes, the Chazanish and Rabbeisha, about how to view cans. Opening cans, an issue of Bona, it's Chazanish Yudir, or it was an issue of Zoser, according to Rabbeisha. If you go down the route of Rabbeisha, that a can, in the state that it is called a Kli, and therefore it's a question of Zoser, so what's the din? Is Zoser Mutter, Zoser not Mutter? So there is a very cryptic Gemara, Maseches Beitza, that tells us that ain't steer b'kelim, that the Balach of Seis only applies to Karka, but Chubba Karka doesn't apply to Kalim. So there's a major Machlekes Rishonim, what exactly that means, because there are other Gemaras that don't seem to bear that out. Other Gemaras in Maseches Erevin that seem to say there is some kind of an issue of Sosa when it comes to Kalim. So there is a Machlekes Rishonim, what the answer to that question is. So the Tosus quotes the possibility that ain't steer b'kelim means when you're dealing with a Kli, that's not such a great Kli anyway. If you have a real solid geshmacha Kli, and then you smash it, so yeah, that's the Lach of Soysa. And again, whether it's going to be deraisa, derabanan, depending on whether you think about makalkalit, and, you know, is it a derachtik or derachilchul, so for technical reasons, maybe it won't be a deraisa. But to say that the Malach of Soysa doesn't apply to Kalim Lagamri is not a true statement to Soysa. So what was the context, what was the meaning of the Gemara and Beitza that said, ain't steer be Kalim? So Soysa says, if you look carefully, so the Gemara is talking about what's called the mustaki. The mustaki means a kli that's half put together with some glue, some spit. It means you have a barrel, but it's not a full barrel. It's a barrel made up of 15 different broken pieces that were glued together with some tree resin or something. That's where the word mastic comes from, gum. I think it's an Arabic word, if I'm not mistaken. So it comes from the word mustaki. So says Taisus, if you have something that's not such a great kli anyway, and then you break that apart, that's all the Gemara meant when it said ain't steer b'kelim. But if you have a real solid kli and you break it apart, so that would be a problem of Soysa, potentially a Soysa deraisa. And the Ran suggests, no, the Ran says that Gemara said ain't steer b'kelim, it means lagamri. Aye, there's a Gemara in Erevin that seems to say that there is a problem of Soysa. So the Ran says that kli is a very, very big kli. It's more than 40 saw. So we don't do anything. There's a din of chastumas kelim. If you have a kli 8, that's more than 40 saw. So it's not really considered to be like a kli. It's considered to be almost like karka. It's not subject to chastumah. If you have a big kli, not all materials are like that, but by kli 8, it's such a xerza kosa that it's very, very big, that it's not really movable, so then it's not makabal tumah. So the Ran says, just as in chastumah b'tahara, there's a chilik between very big kelim and small kelim. So to nuchas Shabbos, that if it's a very, very big kli, so it loses the status of a kli, it's treated more like an entity of karka, and therefore there would be a malach of sois. But li yitzui, that it's smaller than 40 saw, so then ein steer b'kelim legamri. How do we task in halach of the shayos? That's a big machlokes, the gedalia paskin, the shulchan aruch, the gra, although later acharonim get into this fray about how we task in the shayos. So Rav Moshe says that he thinks that the issue of opening cans is going to depend on this, because again, Rav Moshe looked at cans from the opposite vantage point of the Chazon Ish. He thought that a can is a kli, and therefore when you open it, you break it apart, so you're being sois in a kli. So if you all like the Ran, like the Vonagon Paskin, that ain't steer became the gamre, even if it's a good sturdy kli, so then good, no steer and finish, and you're allowed to open up the can the gamre. But if you hold like the Shulchan Aruch, holds like Tosis, that if it's not a mustaki, if it's a sturdy enough kli, it can hold its own, so then there is steer b'kelim. So Rosh says, not so simple, to open up a can, maybe a shal of a deraisa, a shal of a sois or a cycli. So Rav Moshe goes back and forth, how do we paskin? And then Rav Moshe throws in a monkey wrench, throws a curveball into the sugya. Rav Moshe says there's a sugya in Masechta Shabbos that talks about if you have like a basket made out of, you wove together like leaves of a lulav, so called chosolos. So the Gemara seems to say you could take those chosolos and just break them apart in order to get the stuff. You stored some food inside the chosolos, you want to break apart the chosolos, you're allowed to do that. So Rav Moshe says, why are you allowed to do that? According to what they have to rishon them, there's an issur of steer on kelim. It's not such a big chosol, it's not 140 cell, so what's that there? So Rav said it must be that Chazal understood when you have an item that's not really a kli in and of itself, it was only made for one purpose. Its whole goal was to protect the food, so the outer part of the kli becomes almost like buckle to the food. That it's mashal about the v'dayr, Rav says, and you crack a nut. So you can discuss cracking nuts, whether it's a bayir, whether it's dosh, you can pilpul about that, but nobody says that. It's called tzoysia. The shell of the nut is a kli, it's protecting the nut. It's I'm being seisa of the nut. That's nuts as much. That's crazy. That was not meant to be fun. That's crazy. Why is that not called a seisa? So Moshe said, because obviously it's not really a kli. Its whole goal of the nut was created by Kodesh Baruch Hu to protect, the shell was created by Kodesh Baruch Hu to protect the nut. So it's bottled to the food. We had that idea a little bit by Korea, if I'm not mistaken, by the Chazon Ish. I think we didn't we quote this back by Korea's or Malachavis. Did we quote that idea that the reason why you're allowed to rip off the leather off the top of the barrel of wine because of the Chazon Ish, that because it's kind of like bottled to the food or something. So it's a similar kind of idea to Rav Moshe say. Rav Moshe said when you have a can, so why did they make the can? They made the can for one reason, to protect the tuna fish inside. So when you break apart the cans, you're not breaking a kli, you're breaking something that's a mere protection of the food. So that's not considered to be a malacha b'chlal. So that idea that Rav Moshe has, that you can have something that looks like a kli, but a halacha, it's not a kli yet, because its whole purpose is to protect that given food. So that's Rav Moshe's theory as the Betulas Caleb also. It's Rav Moshe's the famous kula, that if you have a Snapple bottle. So I drink the Snapple bottle, and now I want to reuse the Snapple. I'm going to fill it up with water now, in the old days, in the Snapple bottle. Until a year ago. It's not about just big glass. So Rav Moshe and Akula, you're allowed to do that. Why? Because Kolzman that was made in the factory by Snapple was only made to protect the iced tea. They weren't interested in, no one thought you were going to use it again. So the whole goal of the Snapple bottle was just simply to protect this iced tea. So the Snapple bottle didn't have a shame clue yet. When does it take on a shame clue? You decide to start to reuse it and use it for other things. So now it becomes a lachli a kli. At that point, it's nasa b'yad Yisrael, because you own the kli, you own the style bottle at that time. So that's a kli that was nasa tachas b'ayos Yehudi. So that ain't tzorach tevila, there's no need for tevila for that. So that shuv Rav Moshe by Tfilas Kelim is the same kind of an idea that he has in Hilchos Shabbos as well, that a kli could be considered to be bottled to the Eichel. So Rav Moshe writes that he thinks that the tzir of these two things is probably mutter open cans on Shabbos. That number one, could be according to half the Rishonim, there's no sorcerer and kelim altogether. And number two, that these chosol, these cans, probably have a lach equivalent of a chosol, and therefore they're not considered to be a clean, they're gornish, it's not subject to the malach of Sayyid altogether. The end of the tshuva, Rav Moshe writes, like a 20-page tshuva, the end of the tshuva, Rav Moshe writes, probably, yes, say, you should try to open all your cans before Shabbos. You shouldn't rely on this, like, cool, you don't have to. But if you're stuck, you can't find any food, you're allowed to open the cans. So it's interesting that, according to the Chazon Ish, when you open up cans, you have to do it in a way that destroys the can. You got to aim to destroy the can because the last thing you want to do is violate Baina. According to Rav Moshe, you're trying as best as possible not to violate Tzoyser. So it's a different mindset. So according to the Chazon Ish we mentioned last week, the only way to open up a can is to open it up in such a way that's totally discarded. Whether you have to literally destroy it or just discard it is a further shaila. But according to Rav Moshe, once it's put it open, if you hold it's chaisolos, if you hold Zayn bin Steer Bekelim, you can open it and just finish it. There's nothing wrong per se with opening. So yesh v'yesh in terms of the cans. This whole discussion has nothing to do with opening soda cans. That's a legamri different story. That's what's called the Pesach Yofel. So hopefully we'll have to get the Machma Patish for that. Sit from Allah legamri.
Could you repeat the similarity between
Yeah, the Rav Moshe had this idea that this bottle is not really a kli. This bottle is just a protection of water. It will only become a kli if I decide to reuse it. So if I decide to put other things inside, so then I'm using it for different functions, so then it becomes a kli. At that point, it's owned by a Jew, so there's no tefillas kelim on it.
So would reusing it be an issue?
No, according to Rav Moshe, a can is not a piece of garbage. The Chazon Ish had the issue that opening a can is called bainus a kli. Rav Moshe looked at a can and said, it's there already. It's already a kli. The only malach it can possibly be is a malach of Sayyid. There is another strange application of a bainah that appears in the Gemara in the Sefer Shabbos, and that's a potential issue of bainah ba'ochlin. So the Gemara says that megabein, that making cheese, is considered to be a malach of deraisa of bainah. Why is that? Because bona means you take a lot of little pieces together and you glue them together and you cement them together and you build yourself a house out of wood and plastic, all kinds of different things. And bona and cheese is the same thing with gabi. You take a lot of all the curds and you, I don't know how to make cheese, I have no idea, but you turn it into a double gush, into a big solid piece. So that's considered to be, anything you do to make the cheese making process is considered to be bona. So it's because of that, the Tosfos has a very, very fascinating kasha. Tosfos has the kasha that if that's the case, so then Megabein should probably be Mutter and Yontif, because it should be Echol Nefesh. So if it's Megabein, it's Mutter and Yontif, we should apply the rule of Mitoch to it. Mitoch that it's Mutter be Yontif, it's Echol Nefesh, should be Mutter Shalom, it's Echol Nefesh. So therefore Tosfos says it should be Mutter to build a house on Yontif. Why not? So Mitoch Shehutter, Melechas Bainer. Same way we say mitoch shehutra carrying for food, you're allowed to carry a machzor. Mitoch shehutra havara for food, you're allowed to heat your house. So mitoch shehutra to make cheese on yontif, so it should be mutter to build a house midarais. That's what's his kasha. I think most of the fresh not allowed to build a house. This is the Beitz, Mishnayis and Beitz that say you're not allowed to build on yontif. So Tosfos writes, those mistam chumas midrabanan. The question is better than the answer. So the other Achronim don't like that. There's some technical glitches in terms of mitoich, in terms of that cash. Other issues why we probably don't assume that way. So again, it doesn't make much of a difference. You can't build a house on Yontif, you can't even make cheese on Yontif. But in theory, midaraisa, maybe there's a makom lekushas atosis. So this idea that boina could apply to a food stuff, so this becomes a potential issue for us also. So the Poskim write that any time you make any kind of nice shapes out of food items, you start building houses out of cookies or something, you know, kind of strange buildings that look like you're making a chativa out of different pieces. So that could run into a problem of bonnet. So this was the big issue that the Poskim discussed today about making sushi on Shabbos. Is that a problem? So some Poskim wanted to ask them making sushi because they felt that you're taking a lot of little pieces and you know combining them all together. You had some seaweed and you had some rice and you had a piece of tuna or something. You had some cucumbers and you combine them all together. Now you have a chaticha shel sushi. So maybe that's a problem of boina. So there are different opinions about that. Some different caterers in Ashkoch have different opinions about that. Some will make others are machmir. Okay, this idea that if you take a lot of little things and you combine it together, that's called bonus. That's what the post can write, that you could have bone on snow. And let's say you make a snowball on Shabbos, or you make a snowman on Shabbos, so that would be a problem. There's a big machlek as a poskim where the snow is muktzah altogether. You're allowed to play around with snow on Shabbos. You know, so the Gemara says in Erevin that rain that falls on Shabbos is not considered to be muktzah, even though it's nowhere, it didn't exist. All of a sudden they have a cup of water on the floor. So why is that considered to be no? Let's say, said that Maya be Ive Mabel Blee, that the water is there already. The water is ready, the clouds are already there. The water is there, it just hasn't made it down to the ground yet. So that's not considered to be no. So the Pashup Shah is the same should be true when it comes to snow. So Rav Moshe had a chilik between the two. Rav Moshe writes that water is only a question of nolad, but it's not a question of muktzah in the sense that it's not usable. Water is usable. You can drink the water. So rainwater is perfectly acceptable to drink. So it's not that it's a eitz of yavonim. Whenever something is mamish garbage and you can't use it for anything, it's an eitz of yavonim. So Moshe says the Gemara wasn't talking about rainwater. Rainwater is usable. The only shot that the Gemara had was, is it a shot of nola? Did that the Gemara solved? It's not nola because it might be maybe the water is there already. But says Rav Moshe, when it comes to snow, you eat snow. You can't do anything with snow. We can eat the snow. We should go and eat snow. So Rav Moshe said that since no one's going to be eating the snow, therefore the snow is considered to be mukta mamish. You can't play with it because you can't make a snowball. You can't make a snowman because it's burning. So what do you do with it? So the Chora, one could argue that maybe the Metzius depends on the place to place, time to time. So in Rochinav, if you live in Lower East Side, it snows on the FDR Drive. It's pretty nasty, disgusting looking snow. No one's going to run drink that. But I know when my kids are little, so they would always go to the backyard and they would start making some grape juice slushies out of the snow. They took a handful of snow and have it. So if it's Roy Le'achila, so then it's all right. So it should be okay. Who was he asking me a shayla? Somebody called me the shayla about snow. I forgot what it was. Somebody called me a few months ago in Eretz Yisrael. I forgot a bit what they were hacking me about the snow. And I was so excited that they asked me to shout about the snow because Gloy Mill said the snow was edible. So I forgot a bit what the issue was. Anyway, back to the story. So you have to be careful with bonus. A bonus is not just for the building of the houses. Bonus could apply possibly to Caleb. Bonus could possibly apply to Oakley. It could apply to other kinds of things as well. Okay, we're going to move on to the next two malachas. So we're going to look at malachas Havara and malachas Kibui. So when you talk about malachas havara, our initial reaction is that's the worst possible chol Shabbos could be. It's the malacha that says explicitly in Chumash, "Lo svar esh b'chol shosech b'mishabbos." So the Gemara has a machlekes atanoim in the seventh parak of Masechta Shabbos as to why did the Torah single out havara? If any malacha that was involved in the construction of Mishkan is also, and havara was used in the Mishkan, so then why do I need a pasuk that way? That's also. So it's machlekes atanoim and a kotz lakotz. What the answer to that question is? So Rabbi Nosson says that the Torah really didn't mean to sing out Havara per se. The Torah could have just as easily singled out any malacha. The Torah just wants to isolate a malacha. Could have been Kais, could have been Marek, about any malacha, just to show you that Yesh Chilik Malachas L'Shabbos. Let's say a person does a lot of different malachas on Shabbos, the Shege Yechad, so it's going to be Chayav multiple Chatos. So usually the rule is, let's say, a guy forgot, that didn't realize that this pizza was Chametz. So he says, has a slice of pizza, then he didn't realize that these noodles were chametz, he didn't realize that the bread was like, he eats a lot of different chametz on Pesach, or Behalem Echad, so he only violated one isser of chametz, so he brings one kamechatz. So one ta'an increases that says, that kederes b'chalkos, of one's cake and one's noodles and one's pizza and different things. So maybe each one is a separate entity. We don't pass like that. So we pass it's the same chametz over one nisa, one kor b'chatos. If you remember in the middle, then you forget again. Then you have to bring for multiple halmomoses. So the Gemara raised the shayla masechta Shabbos. Let's say a person has violates full Shabbos a lot of times. So do we view all the melachos of Shabbos? It's like eating multiple kizeis of a chametz. Or do we say each melach is a separate iser? So the Gemara concludes that each melach is a separate iser, and therefore you have to bring per melach. So let's say if I write a whole book with write 1,000 iseis, so and then I remember afterwards, Gevalt, I violated Shabbos, I don't have to bring 1,000 korban chatoses. But if I did a little writing and a little building, a little libun, a little charish, a little zeres, then I have to bring a chatas per melacha. So that's why Rabbi Nosson said, that's what the Torah signals that Avar, just as an example of the Chalak Yotzas that teaches that all melachas are like that. Rabbi Yaisi disagrees. Rabbi Yaisi says, no, Avar is the lav Yotzas. So the Torah signals that Avar to tell me that Avar is taka less than a melacha. So Avar is taka not really chayev skila, not chayev karis on it, not chayev chatas. It's just a lav yama. If you light a fire on Shabbos, it's like eating chazer. It's not so terrible. I mean, it's bad, but it's not so terrible. It's not like the other 38 melachas. So according to Rabbi Yaisi, if you do bayre, that's melacha deraisa, chayev skila. You do you light a fire, that's not the end of the world. So we don't pass the Rabbi Yaisi. We unequivocally pass the Rabbi Nelson, that Avar is the chalak yatz, and therefore Avar is on full force, full, you know, on par with all the other lamites melachas. Is there any nefkamina ladina b'chlal from the sheet of Rabbi Yaisi? So Tosfos and Beit has a whole pilpul in the second parak about maybe Rabbi Yaisi's sheet would impact on Avar on Yom Tov. There's a Rishalmi that says, that leaves as a suffix whether you're allowed to light a nesha batol on Yom Tov. Let's say I want to light a candle for no reason. It's not bechonevish, it's not mitoich, it's not mishigas, I want to light a candle for no reason. So the Rishami is not so sure that it's awesome. So Taisa says, why should it be mutter? Maybe. So Taisa said, the holy Rabbi Yossi, so Avar is a lav yotzes, it's not really melochot, it's not a melochot, it's not also on Yom Tov legamri. So that's already more of a Yom Tov shia than a Shabbos shia. But for Shabbos purposes, the whole thing doesn't make any difference because we pass the Rabbi Nelson anyway, that Avar is a regular full-fledged melacha. Fine, so you can't do Avar on Shabbos, and whatever you can't light, so you can't extinguish kibbutz, is the flip side of melachas Avar. So there are many actions that are mamish Avar. Strike a match, that's for sure, because it's the Avar. Even on Yom Tov, when Havar, at least the Tzorich, is for sure mutter, striking a match is also, the Gemara says, the Mishnah is the enemy of the Beitza, that there's an Isser, according to most poskim, it's only an Isser Derabbanan, to be molded Eish Mechadosh, to make a new fire, to scratch, to strike a match, to rub two sticks together, rub two stones together, that's an Isser Derabbanan. Why is it Asim and Derabbanan? So according to many Misham, that's like a molded or a nolan, or something related to Chuz Mukhtza slash a molded type of areas of Halacha. But again, for Shabbos, I don't need that for Shabbos, of course, that's a melacha d'oraisa. So anytime I either start a fire or if I add fuel to a fire, let's say there's a fire already going and I put more wood into the fire, that's also a melacha d'oraisa. Let's say, for example, a person drives a car, old style car, gas car, gas operated car. So when you turn on the car, so you get multiple flames are being started, they're all kind of spark plugs are being ignited, and then every time you press the gas, so you're pushing more gears is getting ignited, more gears are being ignited, and more havaras are acting, there's more fuel that's being burned, so the causing of the fuel to be consumed, there's a bite, malocha. So it's if you really, really want to go for the big bucks and get the most malochas in for your time, so drive a car is a good way to do it. I think Rabbi Riviat has in his cheshbon that if you drive a car like turn the car and you drive for like 1 second, you have about 5,000 different acts of havara because there are different spark plugs and different amounts, and everyone is another ignition, mamish thousands melachos of havara. There's only one korban chatas because there's only halamechad, but so driving a car is not a good idea on Shabbos. Worse than not a good idea. It's about the worst kind of melachos Shabbos you could possibly dream of doing because there's the mamish multiple acts of havara. So of course the most common shaila that we have in terms of havara is what's called the gachela shel mateches. So what would the din be if a person has a piece of metal and he causes the metal to glow? Is that considered to be havara or not? So making wood burn is called melacha, making gears, making oil. But if you put oil, so cause oil to be consumed, so there's no difference whether it's a little cup of olive oil or whether it's a big gas tank of oil from Exxon. So that's called the Madlikas Hashem, and that's for sure a Malacha D'oraisa. But what if I just take a piece of metal and I heat the metal up in such a way that the metal now glows? So the metal is giving off heat, it's giving off light, it's doing all the things that a fire does. On the other hand, it's not exactly a fire. Why is it not exactly a fire? Because it's not really getting consumed. Now, the truth is, it's also getting consumed a little bit. And down the line, if you do it enough times, it'll probably be gone also. But at least the firosa ayin, there's nothing really being consumed. So this is a big, big question. Should we assume that the Torah definition of havara requires that something gets consumed? Or do I say, no, if it looks like a fire, it's producing the result, the consequence of a fire, it's producing light and heat, so my nafkamina, whether it's getting consumed or not. So that was a big question. So the Avnezer had a very, very fascinating riot to this from a pasuk in Parshas Shmos. It says, v'nei asne bo'er ba'esh, v'asne enen ukal. So he says, the Torah calls it a bo'er ba'esh, it's a chavara, enen ukal, even though it wasn't being consumed. It's a chavara. Interesting, right? It's a raya that you don't really need consumption of something. So the truth is, it's probably a machlekes rishonim. Rubid the rishonim seem to hold that a gechela shemateches is a malacha deraisa. Heating up a gechela to the point that it glows would be a potential malacha deraisa. The Rambam says that, at least in certain contexts, the Rambam says that. Rashi seems to say that in Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos talks about extinguishing a gechela shemateches. So you have a piece of hot metal. It's glowing, and you want to pour water on it to cool it down. So that's not malachas kibui on the level of deraisa. So Rashi says the reason why it's not malachas kibui is because it's not going to form a coal. It's not going to really. It's not like a piece of wood. If a piece of wood that's burning, it's going to turn into a charcoal when it's extinguished. So the metal's not really going to do that. So Rashi says that the malachas kibui is nikra al shem asiyas hapecham. If it's something that can't become a pecham, that's not considered to be kibui. So the chwer v'dayim from Rashi. Rashi didn't say it's not called an Eish. If Rashi meant that there's no Havar Bechlal on a Gechel Shematechas, Rashi, why'd Rashi have to give you a Dreya around and give you a story that it's not subject to Kibbutz because of a cork that was Kibbutz? Rashi should have said it's not Kibbutz because it was never Havar in the first place. It can't be Mechab, it wasn't burning. So it appears from Rashi that is considered to be Eish. So many, many Rishonim go down that route that heating up metal is considered to be Eish. There's a Sugya Masechas Pesachim about the Abba Mises Bezin of Sreifa. That was done by HG Saref. It was done with a piece of hot lead. So lead is a metal, so they heated up the metal and they put the hot metal that would accomplish the surface paskoyin. And the Gemara calls that by HG Saref, the pasuk says. So that's the question: is that an exception to the rules? That the definition of H. So although there may have been a minority of Yunrishen that maintained that heating up metal may not necessarily be H derai, so the consensus view, all the Gedolei Pesach with the last 150 years was, is that we don't follow that. We follow the Rash and Rambam, the other Rishonim, that heating up metal to the point of glowing is considered to be a malacha derai. So it's for that reason that it was Mekubal already in Europe back in the 1800s when Thomas Edison first made his light bulbs. So when the early poskim in Europe started to look at those light bulbs, so they all came to the same conclusion. Basically, all of them concluded that we're dealing with the malacha derai. And that's the way a nimnu v'gam, that's the final p'sach la'halacha. As a tshuva that Reb Chaim Moser was asked about electricity again, is there really havar derais on it? And Reb Chaim Moser refused to answer the question. He says that the more he's going to write about it, the more people are going to start to be mafakfik. He says, everyone knows, that's the dinner, it was already decided the last generation. All the Gedolei Poskim know that heating a light bulb till it glows is a malacha derais, and there's nothing to talk about. Then he talks a little bit in the tshuva, but he doesn't really give a whole full-fledged tshuva. That's why Reb Chaim Moser had the practice of reciting Borim or Ha'esh on electric light bulbs, because he was so convinced that it's an Eish Gomer. He wanted people to know that it's an Eish Gomer. They should know they can't turn on the lights on Shabbos. They quote from Reb Chaim also. Reb Chaim also used to light. He used to make a Borim or Ha'esh on electric bulbs. Today, you have to be very, very careful with that, because most of our bulbs are a little bit different. We'll talk about it in a moment. But in the old days in Europe, so it was the old Thomas Edison bulbs, so they were able to make a Borim or Ha'esh. So this was true when a light bulb consisted of a piece of metal that was glowing. It was the old incandescent bulb. It was a filament inside, a piece of copper or something, whatever it was inside, and it would glow. And so that we assume was a malacha deraisa. So over the years, our light bulbs have changed a lot. So our light bulbs, many of them are fluorescents. So fluorescents, there's nothing glowing. There's no metal that's glowing. It's just a lot of gases are heated up. So some wanted to raise the question, well, maybe there's no havara there. If there's no havara there, I didn't say it's mutter. Remember from the last sugya we said that all electric devices, even without havara, are osur, either according to the Chaz Nish because of bone nail, because when the other parts can be molded, other potential issues. But it's important for us to know, we deal with their ices, their abundance. Most of all, agave and yakum. So what's the status of the electric bulbs that don't have a filament burning, like the fluorescent bulbs? So the poskim on the orer that although they may not have a bulb, they may not have a filament that's burning, there is a starter involved, and apparently, I don't know enough about the physics, but apparently when you turn on the fluorescent bulb, so there is some kind of a spark that starts that gets the ball rolling. So that gufa is considered to be a chashash of avara. So it could be that although at one time people used to assume fluorescence only derabana, and you have to rethink that. It's not so partial the fluorescence of derabana. It's very possible that the araisa. It still may not be such a problem, like Gabi Miriliakum, because it may be maybe on a psik resha, and you know, psik resha on a Miriliakum is probably mikra didn't really mutter. That's already taught a lot of discussion. We'll talk a little bit more about Miriliakum towards the end of the year, so we'll come back to that a little bit. But the bottom line is you can't turn on a regular bulb on Shabbos, that's a melacha deraisa. You probably can't turn on a fluorescent bulb also as a melacha deraisa. Bavar also, the bahavar, then it's bainer, or it's molar, or it's some kind of a disa deraisa, derabanu. So all bulbs are, bottom line, are off limits. Even the bulbs that we have now, they're not even fluorescent. All bulbs in Maisa are considered to be a nisa gama. A lot of the shilas that come up in terms of lights don't involve a person turning on a light intentionally. We spoke about this a little bit in the past about the psikrashas, the lo nichales. A person walks past lights and all of a sudden sensors and the lights are going flying up and down all over the place. So what's the take on all these things? So we mentioned that if it's a psikrashas, the lo nichales, no, and assuming that these lights are most probably only derabanan anyway, most of the lights are probably derabanan. So if they're derabanan, it's psikrashas lo nichales, so we can almost look the other way. If you don't want to go down that route, so then you have to make some kind of assumption that this is considered to be like a quasi-grama with it's a psikresha derech grama, something like that. So maybe that's mutter, or maybe it's not even melachas machshavas altogether. The guy is I'm just walking the street and a melach is happening on its own somewhere. Maybe that's not even considered to be a mice altogether. So a lot of different reasons that are given. When the sensors of the light started years ago, so people used to try to avoid them. Again, I would jump around. If I knew there's a light over here, and there's the camera here, I go around the back. Today, forget about it. It's not shayach to avoid passing cameras. Any given street has 5,000 cameras on it. If you go to the coastal, you're being photographed 15,000 times over every split second. So there are cameras on. So we're relying on a combination of these different coolers. When it comes to malachas kibui, so there's a whole sugya in the Masechet Shabbos about gram kibui. Let's say a fire breaks out on Shabbos, so the whole assumption of the 16th parak of Masechet Shabbos is that you're not allowed to put that fire out. Why are you not allowed to put that fire out? Because it's a kibui, malacha of kibui. Even though it's probably not going to be a deraisa, it's going to be a malacha tzich legufa. If I put out a piece of wood that's burning to use the charcoal, that's a malacha deraisa, that's legufa. If I'm putting out a fire because I want to prevent it from burning down my house, that can't be a deraisa. That's at worst only melach she'atzich leguf, according to most of Shomans only derabanan. And still the din is you're not allowed to put out the fire. So the all the poskim write already for hundreds of years that the medev ha'mamurim, that the Gemara is a whole, there's 10 blot in the Gemara about not putting out fires on Shabbos. All the different problems putting out fires on Shabbos. So the poskim say, it's assuming that there's no pikuach nefesh. So in the olden days, a guy lived in a farmhouse somewhere 10 miles away from town. So if a fire breaks out and there are three people live in the house and all three people are out safely, so then it's only hefsid moment. So hefsid moment is not matter to do malachas kibui. But bizman hazeh, that houses are much closer to one another. So every fire that takes place in any civilized area is always a potential because nefesh. You're going to get people out of your house. How do you know what's in the next house? There'll be somebody sleeping. There'll be an older person. There'll be a baby. We can make such cheshbonos. So therefore, we have to assume bizman hazeh that all fires in our areas where we live are all potential pikuach nefesh. And therefore, any and every fire that breaks out has to be treated like a regular fire during the week, whether it means using your own fire extinguisher or if it's a kind of fire that requires a call to the fire department. And whatever has to be done is done normally, and no one should pay any coolers. And all those sugars are not relevant as well. What if the closest house is taka across the street? No house stopping me. So the place can quote from the fire experts that say that's not true. That even houses that are not mamash on top of each other, sparks fly, and the house on one side of the street can set another house ablaze, and therefore we cannot take any sphagus. And whatever chazal we're talking about, they were talking about isolated farmhouses in the middle of nowhere. Anything and everything that comes up as banazer, we have to be concerned with, and everything is a suffix of nefesh. Rabbi Ribia in the Sefer, when he gets the melachas mechabe, so he makes this ha'ara, all the contemporary rabbanim will say this. And then in the back, he always gives his Ma'ar Mekoyim as to where he gets every single point is documented. So here he writes as the Ma'ar Mekoyim in the back, the Rockland County Fire Department told him. That's his Ma'ar Mekoyim. So the bottom line is make sure there's no fires in your house. And there are Chalila, so make sure they're dealt with appropriately. So but in the middle of that sugya, putting out fires on Shabbos, the Gemara has a couple of important columns that touch upon Grama. Gemara, the concept of Gram Kibbutz. So hopefully next week we'll try to finish up the sugya of Kibbutz, and then we have to go through Machbe Patish. We got a roll here. We don't have too much time. I think we have one more week next week. The following week is already too close for the Pesach, and then we have, I think, maybe 2-3 weeks after Pesach. We have to, we're supposed to do some Mir Yakam and Chola, something at the end, after the Malacha. So we got to work it out for us. Okay?
Try.
Jews, what do you want?